Hour two of the nation, welcome in. It's a celebration of another Rangers victory here. 1-0 today against the Reds. Jack Leiter has pitched two games so far, 10 innings. He struck out 10 guys and allowed just one run. It's been a special start here to this first full season, hopefully, for Jack Leiter. Let's hope he stays up. Can't say the same for Kamar Rocker. Doesn't look like he's going to stay up. If you ask me, it's going to be Patrick Corbin time here before too long, or maybe that Hauser guy.
Yeah.
It's time for Woolchuck's NFL News of the Day. Here's Zachary.
All right, some Cowboy draft updates. UCLA linebacker Carson Schwechinger, who I've got as the second-best linebacker in the draft. Agree, Brian?
Probably be right. Yeah. I am the third round myself, but I like what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think he probably is about a third round guy. Might go into the second, though, just because he's a little light linebacker draft.
Absolutely.
But I mean, he really is a one-year starter at UCLA, but gosh, he was good last year.
Sure.
And his best football is probably
put
ahead
on
of
weight,
him.
Too.
Yeah, he did. You mentioned that. He'd put on weight at the combine, which is good for him because he was very slender build.
Yeah, he's a 227 guy, probably up to 242 now. So I think that if he can kind of hold on to that, man, he is a quality player when it comes to coverage as well.
Yeah, and really instinctive in the running game. So the Cowboys linebacker coaches were there today, apparently helping work him out in the drills. They did the position drills. He jumped a 10-7 on the broad, ran on the 6-9s in a 3-cone, 4-1 in the 20-yard shuffle. Chargers, Giants, Saints, Broncos also in attendance. So we'll see. Maybe he ends up being one of the 30-day visits. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. One thing we didn't quite get to yesterday from what Shoddy was talking about, the plan is to keep Cooper Beebe at center right now, according to Brian Schottenheimer. So I wouldn't really look for a move there, especially with the new offensive line coach. We had kind of figured that's probably going to be the direction they go with Cooper Beebe, especially in a draft that's not great when it comes to centers right now. Unless, like, Ray Zabel from North Dakota State, maybe you take him and move him to center, but
better off moving a guy than you are maybe the guy that's played the position.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Because none of the centers that we've watched really like, ooh, that, like, last year, different case. This year, no.
Not so much.
It's nice to have the position flex, but you don't need to utilize it right now.
Yeah, no, leave him there if you can, absolutely. And then the Eagles, Jeffrey Lurie, has indicated that Nick Sirianni is going to get an extension here very, very soon.
Hmm.
So I don't know, maybe this could be a win. It's kind of weird to say. He's been to two Super Bowls in 3 years. Maybe the dude is just a hell of a coach. But we've also kind of been riding the roller coaster of like, oh, could he get fired if they're one and done in the postseason? But it looks like they're going to commit long-term to Nick Sirianni, so we'll wait and see exactly what that commitment looks like. But I don't know. Win, loss, what say you?
Hey, I'm not scared of him in Philadelphia. You know, I think a lot of people could have coached that team to a Super Bowl championship. That's what I think about the roster and what Howie Roseman gave. You know, I still think he's kind of free-rolling. Great offensive line, great weapons, great runner, you know, amazing defense, so... congrats to them.
Coordinators were really good too.
Yeah, they lost them.
They went from two coordinators that just basically couldn't get it done to two guys that were outstanding. So good for them to be able to move on from those guys. And you know, I think we're, as much as we don't like Nick Sirianni and want to punch him and that kind of stuff, I think he actually is a good coach.
He probably is. I don't think you can have this much success and not be good.
That his ability to kind of adapt, you know, to his team and to the surroundings and stuff, I think he gets it. And I think that's what Philadelphia needs. And he allows Howie to do his job. He doesn't get in the way of all that.
His personality is just so obnoxious that I'm glad he's getting an extension, because when this finally expires, you know, when they can no longer keep stringing together these great personnel moves or the salary cap gets him, whatever ends it, I want to see his face, because I know it will end toxically and brutally. And the downfall will be just as glorious as their championship.
Yeah, they, you know, that year that they complete, the year before where they completely fell apart.
Yeah,
that was the time to do
quick.
It. It got ugly quick. It was bad. A lot of finger pointing and all that. They had some finger pointing going on in there during the season.
Yeah, he cannot keep those fires down.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just think that maybe there's something there that
he's got other traits that overcome it and more. You know, he's a winner. Good for him.
No, he is.
He's still an obnoxious douche.
He's
kind of perfect for that city.
No question. Yeah. No question. I mean, I just, you know, you have to ask yourself, would you have liked him to be your coach here?
No.
I was just thinking that. Like, do you think he would work as well?
You just called him a winner.
Anywhere outside of Philly.
Well, he's been winning there, you know, but I think organizations win championships. Can't take away the winning from him. But with less of a roster, do you think he would have made this team a winner? Do you think this team would have done
better? I don't think he's like giving you, I don't think he's head coach giving you the advantage X's and O's wise on the sideline. I think he's just kind of the babysitter of personalities, understanding how to press the right emotional button, so to speak, to galvanize the team. But he's not giving you an X's and O's, Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Kyle Shanahan type, Ben Johnson type of advantage. I don't think he's doing that.
It's interesting. That guy's got him to a couple of Super Bowls, you know?
Yeah.
He's been
a good offensive coach his entire career.
I just kind of wonder about that. I hear what you guys are saying, and you're right. He probably doesn't give you the X's and O's advantage, but, man, he finds a way to get the right people in place, and he's kind of a caretaker that way.
Doug Peterson got him to a Super Bowl, too. I'd rather have Doug myself.
It might just be Howie.
You know what? And I love Doug as like a brother person.
Never again with Doug.
No, I mean, I love Doug. I think Doug's one of those guys that's an offensive coordinator. Yeah. And maybe that's what Nick Sirianni is. Maybe Nick Sirianni is just an offensive coordinator guy that isn't really, but he allows that general manager to do what he needs to do. And whatever personalities he brings in or whatever, you know, they coach him up. Give him credit.
Well, damn it, you've gone too far this time, Brian.
Yeah, screw you, Nick Sirianni. I hate your face.
Hey, you know what? I am not. I only worked at the Eagles. I never told anybody I was from Dallas because I was afraid they'd kill me up there.
That was a smart move. Yeah.
It was a smart move.
They didn't know where Waco, Texas was when I told them that. Where are you from? Waco.
Waco. Yeah, Waco. They just figured that was somewhere else in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they didn't quite know. Quite know.
Travis Hunter could be an option for the Giants with the third overall pick in the draft as both a wide receiver and corner, according to Dabes, their head coach. He said, we're going to evaluate him at both spots. He's got a chance to play both ways for us. So we're getting a lot of info. What may or may not be happening, I saw Matt Miller of ESPN say one of his things that he'd bet on, Jackson Dart, top 10 pick here in a few weeks. Quarterbacks, maybe three go in the top 10. Maybe Shador slides. Who the heck knows what's about to happen? But I'm here for it. I'm here for the chaos. I want to be sitting there first round, Brian. We're like, what the hell is going on? We got wild picks happening. But the more quarterbacks, the more better players are moving on down to pick number 12 for your Cowboys. So I'm okay with that. Let four quarterbacks go in the top 10. Somebody take Shuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Somebody fall in love with the Louisville kid.
Let's find a way to get 11 quarterbacks drafted.
All the quarterbacks. 12. Have them all go. Hell, Quinn Ewers, you go in the top 10. Why the hell not?
But that's
real fun.
Rappaport was saying three quarterbacks in the top 15. So Matt Miller kind of upping the ante to now top 10. Jackson Dart in the top 10.
Well, because New Orleans is now a team reportedly very interested in a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And maybe Shador slides. I've been hearing some stuff today like Shador could possibly slide. I don't know. We'll wait and see about that. But maybe if he doesn't, then that opens it up for a New Orleans to take a Jackson Dart or one of these other teams. Now, one team that does appear
locked in. Can I ask you a question real quick? Would you guys consider taking Hunter and Milroe 1-2?
For the Giants?
Instead of drafting Shador Sanders?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I would consider that. Because you have...
It's unfair because you got... I know you guys are getting to see like games and you're not getting to watch the tape like, you know... But
if you just rotate Milroe for just any one of those quarterbacks
if you for what you're hearing about Milroe and Hunter, would that be better than just taking Shador Sanders?
Well, because now if you're playing him on offense as well as defense, you've got the opportunity to have Neighbors and Hunter together.
Yeah, that's nasty.
Plus Tyrone Tracy Jr. is a runner.
Yeah.
You've now got some pretty good skill options there in offense.
I think taking a quarterback at the top of the second might be the play for the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, Adam Schefter is echoing that as well, and you've been on that for at least the last week now, Broadus. Yeah. And Schefter is starting to echo that a little bit. And I could totally understand that, especially when you have the Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston factor. It's sure. Like, hey, Jalen Milroe, you don't have to step in here and get into the Big Apple and be the guy day one. You got some time to refine some things.
Right.
And then you also secure a guy like Travis Hunter who might be a two-way super beast.
Yeah, I don't think I'm passing on Shador. I want a blue chip quarterback. And if I fail on Shador, maybe I come back and hit it again next year and the year after that. As long as I'm in the top five, I'm taking that blue chip quarterback. If I'm waiting for the second round, I'm thinking maybe that's where I want Jackson Dart.
Yeah, I just don't know that he's going to be there. But I do think that'd be better to where he goes. Another name could be Kyle McCord out of Syracuse.
Yeah.
When I hopped on after the Shrine Bowl, WFAN, to kind of talk about the practices, they were all about, like, well, how's Kyle McCord doing? Like, he's in their own backyard there, but there might be some interest. And he's another guy that I think Pete Prisco is even talking about.
Sure.
The NFL seems to really like Kyle McCord.
Yeah, they do.
Maybe more than the media scouts do. Number seven, or six it is with the Raiders. Genty, that relationship, we've kind of been assuming that might be the pick there. Well, here was John Spytek, their new GM, and he jumped on with the NFL Network and was talking about, well, Ashton Genty.
Yeah, my oldest son has made it no secret that if we don't pick Ashton Genty at six, that he's walking out of the family and he's going to find somebody else, probably whoever takes Ashton. I think he's motivated.
He's a free agent for fandom right now.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, Jack is motivated by fantasy football and touchdowns in fantasy football, not necessarily all of team building, but we're I love that my son loves the draft process at 10 years old, and maybe he's starting to fall in love with the scouting process. I hate it a little bit too because I know the life that he's signing up for, but the passion that he has. And he walked right into our building and basically told Mark Davis, like, if my dad doesn't take Ashton Genty, he's doing a bad job.
Is he in there buzzing film with you when you're watching Genty?
No, he goes on YouTube and he watches it himself. So, you know,
and love it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Jack, those are highlights. You know, you got to watch all the plays.
The complete game.
Yeah.
You watch all the plays.
Don't be swayed by highlights.
Don, you were talking about culture earlier.
Who's your source, by the way?
That's funny.
Your agent.
Okay.
I was also with the same agency. Okay. So we have the same agent. You just didn't know that.
All right, Sean.
It's amazing. I do think Genty's probably the pick there, but now his son's putting on the pressure on Pops, like, hey, if you don't take him, I'm switching allegiances. And last year, if you remember the Hard Knocks, it was Joe Schein's kids that were like, draft Jaden Daniels.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, they didn't have the opportunity to. He went 2 overall, right. But still, maybe these kids know something.
These kids might have...
maybe listen to the kids.
It would be fun if your dad was a general manager of a team.
Very.
I mean, you really cool. Get to get in the weeds on some of the team building stuff, hanging out in the war room, you know, and you're just a kid. And if you can really like appreciate that, then you just go right up to Mark Davis and you tell him, like, this is damn well what we better do.
Elliot Wolf worked with us in Green Bay when he was 10 years old, and now he's running a draft for the Patriots.
It's pretty
so right. It can That's happen. How it's done.
Yeah, it can happen.
That's really neat.
Proper Nepo, baby. No, absolutely. But here's the deal. The idea of Genty with Brock Bowers, Geno Smith chucking it down the field, and Chip Kelly, the play caller, pulling the strings, that is pretty dang sexy.
Could be dynamic.
If you're just going for Vegas sexy, if I'm a Raiders fan,
could be Vegas sexy.
I'm feeling very nicey about
I'm feeling that. Real nicey.
And that's terrifying from a Cowboys perspective, like, because you need to come out of this draft with a difference-making running back yourself. But I'll tell you what, the idea of him going to the Raiders, part of it is relieving to me to get you out of that situation where you're pressured to take a guy who ran it like 450 times last year. I mean, the guy had 2,600 yards rushing.
He did.
I know there is not a historical correlation with the rule of like 370 in college. There's a number of NFL Hall of Famers who ran the ball even more than 400 times in a year during college because they were so amazing at it. Like, give this dude 40 carries a game a bunch of times in the 70s and 80s. Like, it happened a lot. But how could it not have some sort of an impact on his long-term durability to do what he did in college over 4 years? Mm-hmm. It's not like he just started becoming a workhorse. You know, they've been giving him the ball constantly for a half decade, Brian. So
his general managers only have so many years at this job.
Yeah, and I'd be excited to get him, but I'm also saying there's a part of me that's relieved that maybe he's going to be off the board because I just wouldn't want that risk.
Yeah, you're as a general manager, and especially if say you're working with the Raiders, you might be in your job for 1 or 2 years the way it is. And so to me, I look at player personnel evaluations differently nowadays because as a general manager, you're not given a lot of time. You're just not. And so the whole idea for me always was to take the best player and then sort it out from there. There's a reason why he went from being one of the most mocked players to the Cowboys at 12 to now being where he is because people realize that they're catching up, that he is one of the best players in this draft, regardless of the position, regardless of the usage, you know. When you talk about his availability, how clean he is off the field, and how he plays overall. And as a general manager, you cannot sit there with any certainty and say that you're going to see the full 5 years of his deal.
Sure.
So that to me right there, team building and all that, great. But that goes out the window because of your lack of job security. I think that's a big, big factor in a lot of these. That's why the Giants should take a quarterback, and they're not. They're not because that guy's scared about his job. That's why he went out and got two veteran guys because he's scared. He's scared that if I don't do better this year, I'm going to get fired. You know, he should take Sanders. You know, he's thinking if I take Hunter, hell, I might hit a home run and I might hit a home run with my second round quarterback. You know, these guys are trying to keep their jobs. Not all of them have the job security like that Jerry Jones has or that guy in Philadelphia has.
Well, and then the fear of, okay, if Genty's off the board, and we've seen plenty of mocks, and then have the Cowboys pivoting to Omarion Hampton, the North Carolina runner. So do they do that? I mean, Brian Schottenheimer, you go back to him in Seattle. They took a guy named Rashad Penny at 18 overall.
Yep, that was John Snyder.
He's been a part of some of those before. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know.
That's more John than it is Schottenheimer.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope that is.
Yeah, it's more John.
682's saying like we're exaggerating his workload. I mean, he did have like slightly over 800 collegiate touches.
He's had a ton of carries.
Yeah, he did.
He's had a ton of touches in general.
He was the Boise State offense.
There's no question he is that. And like I said, but I look at this way. If I'm a general manager, I am not guaranteed tomorrow.
No, you're not.
In team building, if I F this thing up and take him and it doesn't work, I'm going to get fired. I'm just going to get fired. So to me, go out there and take the best player and try and do your best to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, even like for context, Saquon Barkley was just shy of 800 collegiate touches, and he's obviously still getting...
He was banged up a lot early in his career.
We did the research, and there wasn't really a correlation. And Gavin, you said that, but I mean, yeah. I understand where you're coming from, where you're hoping like a first-round pick, can I get a second contract out of a guy? You've got to be prepared. You're not. But for 5 years, if you've got arguably the best running back in the NFL... That could be a win for you, you know, if you just go in knowing that in general.
Difference maker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you bring him onto your team, your outlook for next year is significantly higher, I believe.
Might be your best player.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Last thing here, NFL News of the Day. This is pretty nuts. The record books have changed. The NFL has announced at the league meetings that the statistics from the All-America Football Conference will be incorporated into the league's record books.
Hmm.
The records were officially approved by the league yesterday. So this existed from 46 to 49 as a direct competitor to the NFL before folding, producing the Cleveland Browns, Baltimore Colts, and Niners. Browns won all four of the AAFC championships, which is where Brady's championship mark now becomes tied with
Otto Graham.
So the four titles Otto Graham won in Cleveland when they were there now adds to the three NFL championships he won. So Brady's still the all-time Super Bowl winner, but in terms of just championships, he's tied with Graham. And Bill Belichick, no more when it comes
to Paul Brown being the
all-time championships. Yep, Paul Brown surpasses Belichick, George Halas, and Curly Lambeau for the most championships in NFL history. Belichick, Halas, and Lambeau now each have six titles to their credit. So still have Belichick as the most Super Bowl titles for a head coach with six, but Brown passed him for the all-time mark. So pretty crazy. Like Cleveland Brown fans now probably celebrating today. Everyone else is like, what the hell is this crap? Mm-hmm. If you're a Patriots fan, I'd be ticked.
Well, thank you, Wolchuk. NFL News today, every afternoon, 3 o'clock here on The Fan. Time for the C-Note, Cowboys News. Micah's mom has weighed in on the haters.
And
more is next on The Fan. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. All righty. Micah's mom weighing in. She joined the Law Nation Sports Show. Salute to Law Nation. Says, let me tell you, the podcast doesn't affect anything he does. Trust me. He doesn't really have to do a lot with the podcast. The only thing he's got to do is go on and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Bleacher Report comes on and sets everything up. I do think this might be somewhat of a generational thing. I think I agree with Mom. I think teammates just need to adopt a position that this is just like any other off the field passion or hobby, you know? Certainly whatever Micah says. Now, Micah's got to be responsible with it. Whatever Micah says, you know, he's possibly going to be held accountable by teammates there in the locker room. I'm not saying this is without potential consequence. But I think you could say anything could be a distraction, you know, if you're going off of how other people react to it, you know. But, hey, I'm doing my life. Some people don't like it if you hunt animals. You know what I'm saying? They'd be like, oh. You know, you have this tight end on your team. He's hunting, you know, and he's posting pictures where he killed this deer. I can't believe it, you know. And the PETA portion of your fan base is going to be livid. Some people are going to be offended by stuff. I think that's on them. I encourage Micah to do his life and to tell the haters to hush. So that would be my perspective on this. I think it's cool, and I think he's kind of leading the charge as far as sports players becoming a more active members of the media instead of relying on some sort of a third party. They don't need it. They're talented. They can talk well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is becoming the norm. I think it's less about the podcast factor and if he was checking off all the other boxes. If you're showing up to camp, you're showing up to voluntary workout, you know, you're doing all those things and still succeeding on Sundays, nobody's really going to care what you're doing on your off day, even though it is during the season. I think it's more so about the other qualities, and then you can just throw this as a cherry on top.
Yeah, of the things that are kind of annoying.
Yes.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I think it only becomes a problem when there's something that's said that now is causing an issue in the locker room.
That's another good point. That's right, another good point.
Like, that's the only thing. Otherwise, you're right. Like, Amon Ross St. Brown has a podcast with his brother. They're on two different teams. Does anybody care? Is that a storyline? No. Marlon Humphrey's had one for the last 2 years with the Ravens. These are teams that are winning. As long as you're winning, it's like, nah, everyone's going to turn the other cheek, right? I just want to get Jerry on the show next year. Do we get Jerry on the Micah Parsons podcast and the two of them just like give us a little bit of insight on how these one-on-one conversations go? Because I'd be fascinated with how that is. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I would too. You know, and I think it should be encouraged for players to do this because they're giving us better content. They get more relaxed. They're sharing different sides of their personality that they just don't want to when they're sort of having to awkwardly get into forced, you know, interview situations with media members. They just they do a nice job for the most part. Okay, RG3 recommends that Micah demand a trade out of the Cowboys. Says if Micah wants to win and get paid, he should demand a trade from the Cowboys. I mean, I think he's probably right. That the problem is there's only a handful of teams that I think could have a better chance of getting it done. There's not many teams that are doing it right, as a matter of fact. I think a lot of fan bases should be upset that their team isn't going for it harder. But, I mean, I think Kansas City, Philadelphia, the Rams, you know, maybe the Ravens are better, the Bills are better, but they're not showing any postseason greatness right now. San Francisco's, they're getting to the dance and then choking. And maybe Detroit temporarily, as long as they have this great offensive line and, you know, their amazing weapons together. I think I'd bet on San Diego. But other than that, guys, I'd bet on Harbaugh in San Diego that he figures out how to make that a championship-caliber team.
Two San Diegos in the swear jar.
I'm sorry, Los Angeles.
Yeah. Chargers. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely...
San Diego Superchargers.
They, yeah, I mean, I think there's plenty of other teams. And even teams that have... I mean, look at the Commanders now. Not that you would trade them in the division, but the Commanders are certainly a team. There are teams that when your processes are all, when your priorities are all about winning, you can stumble into some good fortune.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are not that. So they can always look like they're kind of hanging around, but they're never really a real threat to get to number one. Some teams may look way worse than the Cowboys in some years, but all of a sudden, boom, because their priorities are winning and the Cowboys aren't. So, I mean, I'd almost say if you're looking at trying to win a Super Bowl, you're better off on being on any one of the, outside of Cleveland, pretty much every other franchise in the sport. Because you're with an organization that is actually prioritizing winning, and so they have a better chance of getting lucky and falling into it. Now, you may miss the playoffs 3 years in a row at that team, and you probably won't with the Cowboys, but that 1 year you do make the playoffs, you actually might have a chance to do something. The Cowboys have proven time and time again, being in the playoffs, they're still light years away from actually hoisting that Lombardi.
Okay, so I agree kind of in principle with that, but I just don't think there's a lot of teams exploiting the cap like Sirianni did, and there's not a lot of teams drafting better than the Cowboys have.
That's all totally true. Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that you go, and there's plenty of teams that you're the contract, if you're looking at every team in the NFL, and you won't even make the playoffs at all. And that's very real. But I still think that team that's not making the playoffs over the next 5 years still has a better chance to win a Super Bowl before the Cowboys do.
I mean, a team like the Jets, inept. No way Woody's going to do a better job than the Joneses.
The Jets get thrown in there for sure. Cleveland, I mentioned Cleveland.
Snake bit.
But in the Dolphins, NFC.
Yeah, the Dolphins certainly.
In the NFC, everybody else has gotten closer than you have during this drought. But the three teams that do seem to kind of have it figured out would be the Bucs, the Rams, and then, of course, the Eagles.
Yeah, and I think those teams are in. That's where I'd want to get traded to. You know, send me one of those spots. Okay, here's Micah's agent, David Mulligetta. What advice does he give to players considering holding out? Do we have this audio over there, Ross? David Lurie posted this on Cowboys Twitter. He was on with the Alex Okafor podcast.
when in a contract holdout. In your opinion, what's the best piece of advice to players when holding out?
First thing I'll say is players have a lot more leverage than they think, right? You just have to know how to use your leverage. You got to understand who you're dealing with. What I would say to players is first, you have to be reasonable in your demands, right? You know, you got to do your best to try to create a win-win, and you got to be resolute in whatever you're deciding. You can't show weakness. If you decide, you know, I'm not going to play, or I'm going to hold out, or I'm going to do this, you know, if the team doesn't believe you, doesn't really matter, right? So you got to put yourself in a position where the team believes whatever it is you're saying you're going to do, you're going to do. You know, teams know the guys that can really go through that, because it's tough now. You know, when you decide not to show up, or you decide you're going to hold out, or you're going to push for this or that, fans are fans of the team for the most part, right? So you're going to instantly become the bad guy. So as long as you understand what's coming with what you're about to do, and you're okay with that, and you're a type of player that can deal with that, then yeah, I think you just have to be resolute in your stance, and there's always a win. You know, you just got to figure out how to get to it.
So that's Micah's agent, David Mulligetta. I think this one's easy for him. I don't think Micah minds being the bad guy at all. He knows who he is dealing with, Brian. The caveman is how the Cowboys front office operates. A team that never lets its star players go. And a team that pays its star players even if they have a catastrophic injury. Like this is going to be quite an easy negotiation. And now Jerry Jones perhaps gave him the motivation yesterday by making it personal. Just in case you didn't have the stomach for the fight, let Jerry Jones just swing on by for a little bit of a soundbite for you. Go ahead and touch this negotiation off and send it into, you know, potentially toxic territory. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, if he's the shark competitor agent who is after every dollar and after every single contractual win, so to speak, then yeah, this is going to end up being a dogfight right up until the cave takes place on the Joneses' end.
So here was the David Mulligetta response, courtesy of Pro Football Talk, and I believe Florio's going to be on with the morning show tomorrow at 8 a.m. He said, quote, "I agree with Jerry. It's never been about me. The only person that matters here is Micah. At the end of the day, our goal is for Micah to be able to do for generations of Parsons what Jerry has done for generation of Joneses."
I love it.
It's good. Yeah. Very good.
It is. Yeah. Took the high road, but also said, we're getting the back. And yep. I'm setting my client up for generations.
He knows how to, like, take the high road, but also be super tough, you know, without being slimy. A lot of these agents are either, like, super aggressive, or you feel like you're talking with a car salesman. This guy's the real deal.
What I'm sure that Jerry and Steven are reminding Micah is that agent works for you, you know? That if you want to listen to him, and Micah came out and said, you know, hey, my guy's one of the best, da, 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 da. But what Jerry and Steven then might be banking on is like, hey, okay, you're very interested in being here. We've had these discussions. We kind of have an idea of where this thing's going to fall. Okay, this is how we feel like that it could work. But remember, that guy works for you. If you want to make a deal with us, you know, you need to tell him that. Because we'll make a deal with you. But as long as we all know where we're at, you know, we'll be fine. But I have a feeling maybe the Joneses are in these conversations they're having with Micah is they're reminding him that David Mulligetta, Mulligetta says it's not about me, but in reality though, he is the one negotiating the deal. He's negotiating on Micah's behalf.
Yeah.
That's the thing right now. If Micah wants the deal, Micah needs to tell Mulligetta to get the deal done.
Yeah, and he needs to do what Dak did, which is to tell the team, I'm not talking to you anymore. And then he'll really get maximum value.
Yeah.
You know, he can just go enjoy his days and let Dave call him up and tell him when the cavemen decide to give him what he wants. Kevin Sherrington today writing about in the morning news, if Jerry keeps screwing up, it might be time to consider trading Micah Parsons. That's the headline, saying Jerry made it worse. You know, I do think it's crazy because Micah is your ticket to having a pretty dang good defense. If you just have another pass rusher, a decent defensive tackle, and a couple of good corners, bang. You got a top five defense because of Micah, because how special he is. And if you do find the linebackers and safeties and a couple of defensive tackles, you could have the best defense in the NFL because of Micah. Right. If you're going to win the championship with Dak as your quarterback, it's going to be because your defense was nasty, like Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware for the Broncos in 2014. That's your model for winning. So I can't imagine actually wanting to move on. But I think this Jerry thing, didn't he say something about Zach Martin? Didn't he say Zeke who? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he has fun.
He might kind of be having fun. Yeah, he does. He does enjoy this.
And you know, I think stirring it up is a big win in a lot of ways for him. He just can't help himself. Okay, Krusty's Corner's coming up next. Look at this. Time's flying.
It is flying.
As the Rangers take 2 of 3 from the Reds, back-to-back 1-0 wins. I know it put an extra pep in your step, Brian. It did for me, for sure. Where are you taking us?
Yeah, I'm going to, Zach and I want to ask Zach some questions about day 2 picks that he might like. We'll do that next.
Thank you very much, Ross. In for Lucius Alexander today. Frank Caliendo coming up at 4 o'clock in studio. He's in town, and he'll tell us more about that here coming up in about 15 minutes. Here's Brian with Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Brian.
Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate that. We'll get on with it. Zach, I'm looking at, like, pick 44 now. Uh-huh. I look at, like, all the picks. But pick 44 is something that I've kind of focused on, and I wanted to run by you. You mentioned Carson Schlesinger from UCLA. Is that a guy that you are considering at 44, the linebacker?
Yeah, I would consider him at 44.
Okay, we're still kind of waiting. We got the full slate of tests from him today. Did you have what he ran and all that stuff like that? You said
yes. Let me pull that back up for you. Hold on 1 second. I believe,
but he had a 39.5-inch vertical at the combine, so the explosiveness is there with that. You know, the thing that he had 18 quarterback pressures on 62 passes. Did you find that, like, I said this guy has got the ability not only to cover, but also the ability to be like a blitzer guy.
Yeah, I thought some of his downhill work was some of the most exciting part of his tape.
Yeah.
Like his ability to absolutely the blitzing, but his instincts, like his ability to diagnose and then fill the gap and absolutely be explosive at the attack point to stop the run game. Like he definitely can cover, but I thought he was really good going downhill. So his numbers, he jumped 10-7 on the broad.
Yeah.
6-9 on the 3-cone, which I think is the same time that Fred Warner had coming
sure,
out.
Sure, sure.
And then 4-1 on the 20-yard shuttle.
Yeah, 4-1, that's an outstanding time. And here's a team that's looking for linebackers. And I, you know what, I would absolutely consider him there at 44. And you said he is the second best linebacker on your board, right?
Yeah, he's behind Jahad Campbell as the number 2 linebacker. I mean, he's a first team All-American, and the thing is, as we mentioned, he's really only got 1 year of starting across his 4 years at UCLA, but I think he's a guy that he's got some traits that really look like he could be an elite talent to the position.
I agree with you.
So I think he's going to end up going higher than maybe some thought initially because it's a thinner linebacker group, and I think if you want him, you probably do
have to
take
him at 44. Yep, I agree with you. Jalen Noel from Iowa State. If you don't draft a wide receiver at 12, would you consider Jalen Noel at 44?
So I've got him more as a third rounder, but I do like the tape. I'm a fan of the player.
Like, do you feel like he should be higher there, or do you, the third round grade you feel really, really good about?
I feel good about it at 76. I think at 44, I'd be looking at like a Jalen Royals out of Utah State. I'd be looking at Trey Harris at Ole Miss if he's there. Jack Besh out of TCU. Mm-hmm. But the Cowboys might really like Noel, and I don't have an issue with it if they do because the tape's really good. I think he's better than Higgins, even though Higgins is a better player. I think you see more of the things that are going to translate from a route running and creating separation naturally that you know is going to work in the NFL. And Jalen Noel, for his size, even though he's a little bit of a shorter stature, he'll go up and make some big catches. Like, he'll elevate. Extension is there. Mm-hmm. He is a fun player to watch. Very, very quick.
You wouldn't take him at 44 probably because of the size, right? Because of the height?
And I think there just might be some wide receivers I like more there at 44. Yeah,
sure. How about Donovan Jackson, the guard from Ohio State?
You know I would. I put Donovan Jackson as my 15th best player. He was my last first-round grade. I love him. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the best overall lineman from this draft.
Do you think he could get to you at 44?
I don't think so. But if he were there,
would you consider? You would consider him, say, because he's a first-round grade on your board, you would
consider him at 12.
You would absolutely.
If he was there at 44, yeah,
you'd
sign me up. We'd be having a Cooper Beebe night, baby. We'd be cracking Miller Lights there in the studio.
Talk about Donovan Jackson a little bit, though.
So Donovan Jackson was the left guard at Ohio State. So that is the question.
Yeah.
Right? Do you have a worry about, because your need is
you're not
right
going to move. You're not going to move. We've learned we're not going to move.
We're not moving BB.
We're not moving BB.
So Donovan Jackson then would be your starter at right guard.
Yeah.
So there would be the debate in the room. If you want to take a guard, you've got Tyler Booker from Alabama.
Sure.
Who is a stronger, meaner player. Both have some nastiness in the way they block. Booker
but
is...
But the pin and pull stuff is better with Donovan Jackson.
I think Donovan Jackson can fit any scheme.
Yeah.
I think Booker is more of your power run scheme guy. I think Donovan Jackson fits perfectly in the pin and pull. Like what we've seen Clayton Adams want to use,
yeah.
I think Donovan Jackson can slide in day one. And he showed the flex to be able to play left tackle and did it really well over the extended run that the Buckeyes had in the college football playoff. So I'm a big fan of Donovan Jackson. And everything I've heard from just trying to poke around it from coaches at Ohio State,
mm-hmm.
like the stuff you heard about Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
That Josh seems Simmons. To be real.
Josh Simmons.
From Josh Simmons, excuse me, the left tackle. Yeah. Donovan Jackson is like the work hard guy. You don't have any character concern issues with him. Super intelligent, high IQ player, willing to do anything the team needs him to do. I love him. And I think maybe he's not an all pro, but he's going to be a 10-year starter for you.
What about Siobhan Revelle from East Carolina? Now, okay, that's a first round talent right there. Is this the Cowboys at 44 saying, okay, we're not going to be able to grab, we're not taking a corner at 12, but would you take this kid at 44?
Yeah, absolutely would. I've got him as my number three corner, and I'm sorry, I got a cough drop in my mouth here, but
you're doing your thing, man.
This dude, long press corner, like I feel like if Al Harris was still here, I would have just locked him in as a possibility for the Cowboys already. But I think if you could get him at 44, that's a first-round player that could have maybe been the number one corner in this class if it wasn't for the ACL. And he ran already, and he ran a good 40 time, so it seems like the recovery from that, he's got the opportunity to be the best defensive back in this class. He's a willing tackler, doesn't shy away from contact. I think he's got the good recovery speed. The only knock can be a little grabby.
Sure.
So sometimes, like, he doesn't have the natural hip fluidity that maybe you'll see, like, a Jahdae Barron have when you watch him play. So when he has to go ahead and somebody wants to run a double move against him, maybe he can get a tick late, and so now he's going to grab to try and catch up. But I love Siobhan Revelle. I thought the tape at East Carolina, 6'2", 200. You want to play bigger on the outside? Sign me up at 44, Blue Star Special.
Of the 6'2", 200-pound type players, and Revelle being one of them, Will Johnson's the other.
Mm-hmm.
You have Revelle over Will Johnson, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
And
see, I just
I could
think
be so wrong about that. I feel like I'm doing Will Johnson a disservice in a way.
I mean,
why.
It's just
how I felt about him when I watched
it. It's just the question about that Will Johnson, though, about, like I say, does he really, really have, like, the deep speed? Does he have the ability to, like, run with guys? And at 6'2", 200 pounds, can he move as well as, say, a guy like Revelle can?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the biggest question I have. And I don't feel like it's doing Will Johnson a disservice. I have the questions about his ability to run. I mean, that's the thing that worries me the most. How do you have your three technique defensive tackle guys?
Because
they've got Aeneas Peoples, and I'm talking about people around the league, or say, hey, Broadus, you need to consider this Aeneas Peoples from Virginia Tech as a three technique.
At 44?
Yeah.
Ooh. I mean... I've probably got like six guys ahead of him at that spot. Like, I'd be considering, like, if Derek Harmon fell, it'd be a dream. Tyleek Williams out of Ohio State. Jordan Phillips out of Maryland, I'd consider there over Peebles. Alfred Collins, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of there. There's TJ Sanders out of South Carolina, more of a three-tech guy. Darius Alexander of Toledo. And then I'd kind of start to talk about Peebles. I've got Peebles in the third right around with, like, Joshua Farmer from Florida State. I'd think of him at 76, not at 44.
Yeah, I was thinking more of a third round guy, but I'm talking to like Gang of Seven guys, and they're all saying, yeah, you need to watch this Peoples guy.
He's going to go higher than we think, huh?
Yeah, he's probably going to.
I'll go back and do a double check. I mean, I'm kind of at that part now where we've seen so many guys. Like, I can go back and do some homework and like reassess.
No, I just was curious. Because I thought the same thing as you did. I was thinking about a guy that as a three technique. I was like going, okay, cool, that's fine. But to me, okay, if you're thinking about defensive tackle. In the second, you're thinking more ones than you are threes, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going ones that can also give me, like, I think the good thing is most of the ones in this draft can also give you some pass rush ability. They're not just your typical, like, one run-stuffing defender. Like, I think Alfred Collins can get upfield a little bit, right? I think Tyleek Williams shows the ability to get upfield and push the pocket some. So I think you're, This is a more athletic group when it comes to bigger bodied one techs than you previously have seen.
What do you think about, we talked a little bit about the safety group.
Yeah.
The fact that they were bringing in Makuba as a 30 visit guy from Texas.
I'd love him at 44.
Do you think legitimately though, safety, do you think that they're thinking about replacing Wilson or replacing Hooker here with somebody that
I think they could be looking at replacing Wilson for sure. Cause that's a guy you can still post June one him and you're saving, I think it's $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be, you're winning on the cap, and Andrew Makuba would be a tremendous, or Kevin Winston Jr., who we talked about on the draft show yesterday from Penn State.
Yeah.
Like, those would be intriguing options for me there at 44.
Would you like taking a safety more at 44 or the one in the third round?
I don't think any of these safeties are going to make it to round three, like the top guys. I've got them all in the second. And maybe we get lucky, and maybe one of these guys, maybe because like Kevin Winston Jr. is coming off an injury and he's only got 1 year starting.
Yeah.
Maybe he slides to 76. But I'd be surprised if a Makuba or an Xavier Watts from Notre Dame, one of those guys, because it seems like Nick Emmanuel, even though we're not as high as him with some others, it seems like he could be a first-round pick.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Whoever wants to take him, I hope he ends up being awesome.
That tape is not as good as that workout
Little rich for me.
Little rich. What about the tight end? Is that kind of a thing that, you know, we've seen the Cowboys before take second-round tight ends, but is Mason Graham do enough for you to maybe take him there?
Mason Taylor, yeah. I'd take him at 44.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mason Taylor would instantly be. And you guys know I am a Jason Ferguson truther. I stand by him. I think last year, hey, it didn't work out, but I'm hoping he bounces back this year. Problem is you're going to have to pay him, too. He's on a one-year deal. He's expiring after the season. Mason Taylor could be the best tight end you got on the roster. All-around complete player.
Have you looked at these quarterbacks the way that you need to? I mean, would you consider any of those guys in the second round?
Not in the second round, no. I think it's 76 is where I'd start considering, like, a Kyle McCord, maybe. But, Jackson Dart and Shador Sanders I've got as the round two players.
Yeah.
Neither of them are going to be there. Next thing, I've got McCord in the third. But otherwise, like, I'm hoping to maybe get in the fifth round. Could you snag a Seth Hennigan from Memphis?
Mm-hmm.
See an option for you? I don't think at 44 any of the, I think you're going to be reaching on one of those names that are still available there for me. Unless it's Milrow. I'd consider Milrow at 44 if he's there, but it sounds like he's even going to go higher than that.
Yeah, I just worry about the quarterbacks. Like I say, I agree with you about the Milrow thing. I think that he is going to go a lot higher than what I have him at. But I wonder if Dallas is with, you'd consider with the extra pick. If you somehow got the extra pick.
Yeah, if you move down, yeah, absolutely. And Milrow is there. I think that'd be a lot like what the Eagles did with Jalen Hurts a couple of years ago. And the Cowboys apparently were considering that. So I'd be very open to that idea.
Yeah, I think so too. I think with the extra pick, I would more than look at it. Without the extra pick, I think I would wait. All right, thanks, Dawson.
Well, thank you, Brian. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. All right, comedian Frank Caliendo is in town. Addison Improv tomorrow night. Tickets are on sale now. And I think he's the most visible comedian in sports history, maybe. Definitely for the NFL, for sure.
Oh, yes.
But big star. I mean, NFL on Fox, Mad TV. You know him. You love him. Frank Caliendo in studio. Coming up next here, it's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.